Hello, boys and girls. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor and Ring of Honor related events such as All In, which is 4 days away. This week on the show, we are doing our official All In predictions. We're also talking about the week on Ring of Honor television as per usual and anything else that fleets into our heads willy-nilly. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I co-host this show every Tuesday. I contribute to the Wednesday podcast, the Wednesday livecast, PWT Talks NXT. I also co-host the PW Torch VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, where we're going back and watching old episodes of the YouTube series Being the Elite. And as if that is not enough, I am also the new host of Mae Young Podcast, a podcast we'll be doing for the next 2 months covering the 2018 Mae Young Classic. If you're listening to this, that podcast should already, the first episode of that podcast should already be online for your listening pleasure. I'm joined this week, as always, by my co-host on this show and on Elite Repeat. She is All In. She is Emily Fear.
Hello, Harley. Hello, everybody. Yes, I am All In. I am excited. I've got my tickets sitting next to me so that I can make sure that they're actually here and not packed yet, but I am ready. I'm headed to Chicago on Friday. Saturday is the show. I'm psyched. Your co-host for the brand new Mae Young podcast, Bridget, will also be in attendance along with several other people who have made appearances on this podcast or other podcast. So I'm very excited to unite with all of them in Chicago for this big event. I feel like calling it a big event is an understatement. This tremendous happening.
It's definitely the Woodstock of wrestling.
It kind of feels like that. Yeah. And it'll probably be like equal mix. Like parts of it might be kind of lame, but you know, I think it's going to actually be really great. And I'm very, very excited to see just how this all shakes out, what this is going to look like.
Yeah, hopefully it turns out more like Woodstock 69 and less like Woodstock 99 with Limp Bizkit burning the place to the ground.
Yes, I would very much prefer, like, I expect the water to cost like $4 a bottle, but I also would prefer nothing to be set on fire that wasn't intended to be set on fire. So,
well, with Joey Janela and Hangman Page and now Punishment Martinez on the card, no promises.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we keep getting added. Names keep getting added that, you know, don't guarantee a lack of pyrotechnics. So we shall see. Who knows? And let us not forget that Kota Ibushi is in the mix. So fireworks are always an option.
Latest All-In news this week. Brandon Cutler and Punishment Martinez confirmed for the over-budget Battle Royal on the 0 Hour Kickoff show. Punishment Martinez, if you listen to this podcast, you know who he is. He's the ROH television champion. Brandon Cutler, a name I wasn't too familiar with until he showed up on Dojo Pro recently. So we saw a little bit of his work there. And he is a long time. He came up with the Bucks years and years ago as part of Matt Jackson's high-risk wrestling promotion. Went away, did some family stuff a while, and now he's back wrestling. And so, of course, he's going to be involved in this. He's a good friend of theirs.
Yeah, that made sense. Actually, I kind of had wondered if he was going to make it just because of their connection and because he's trying to make a comeback.
We still have at least 4 other people confirmed for the Battle Royal, probably more based on comments from Cody, still to be announced. We also have confirmed for All In, best friends, Chucky T and Beretta, and MJF. And they don't have matches, so it's unclear whether they're in the Battle Royal or if they're not, what they're doing. You think if they were in the Battle Royal, it would have been confirmed by now. Lots of question marks still in play 4 days from the event.
I'm really curious for the best friends and MJF. I mean, MJF, they had done even like the first All Us or the second All Us episode about. So like, it's still very, very curious to me. I would be really surprised if he just got slotted into the Battle Royale. Not that there aren't a lot of really great names in there already. Like they all deserve attention, but it's just, given how much profile he was given early on, I'm wondering where his match is.
And they framed up the Battle Royal as being sort of a collection of people where, they said this on the latest episode of All Us, I think Cody said it, where they had the card booked and then all these other people sort of came to them or expressed interest, and that's what the Battle Royal is. And Cody said on that episode that in order to pay for the Battle Royal, he's just selling off things. He basically, all of the ring aprons and the turnbuckles, everything you're going to see at the show has already been pre-sold off. And when the night's over, they're just stripping the ring and boxing it up, basically.
Wow.
That's what he's paying for the Battle Royal and the participants.
I haven't been keeping up, and I'm sad that I missed that, but wow, okay. Well, it makes sense.
Then that raises the question of MJF isn't part of the over budget, because he was one of the first names confirmed months ago.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly when the Best Friends got determined, but apparently it was early on, and then it was kind of shelved thinking that Beretta might not be back from injury, but now that he is, I've just a couple of pretty high profile names that are still wanting to be placed there.
I haven't been this excited about a pay-per-view in a long, long time. And a lot of it is the question marks. Just general, like, how's the arena going to look? How are they going to present this? Are there going to be video packages, vignettes, backstage stuff filmed by Nick Jackson on his handheld camera?
Yeah, I had assume as much. I assume that it's going to include some kind of interstitial type videos that have been shot by them, considering how much of this is tied to being the Elite, that makes sense. So, and with All Us probably providing lots of like background footage as well and interview footage, I'm wondering what kind of tone this is going to take. I feel like it's going to take a different tone than any other wrestling show I've seen live. I feel like this is, it kind of is like Woodstock in that way. Like it's a celebration of wrestling in a way that like even your big event wrestling isn't so much, because All In is so much more than just like a promotion's big pay-per-view event. It doesn't belong to any one entity. So it's kind of belongs to like everybody who is involved. That creates a much more like ceremonial aspect to this than just, you know, like not just, but like, oh, it's that time of year again. It's WrestleMania, or it's that time of year again. It's Supercard. Like, this is one of a kind, as is the first of its kind.
I was only about a month old when WrestleMania 1 took place, but I imagine this is what it felt like. Just this huge event with something that hasn't been done before by any means, and not knowing what's going to happen. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, just personally speaking, aside from like college football games that I've been to and the occasional sporting event in town, like this will definitely be the biggest wrestling event I've ever been to, and probably the furthest I've traveled for a big sporting event like this too. So very excited for a lot of firsts in my life.
We'll get back to our All-In predictions later on at the end of the show. In the meantime, another saga that's been going on for what feels like ages. I feel like we need to cue up the video package here for the previously on Talking Honor. Harley tries to get a free t-shirt that he has earned and fails. This is just funny at this point, which is why I'm bringing it up. I'm not bringing this up to be a bummer or to vent. It's just at this point, the fact that it's gone on this long is humorous to me. Here's the full story if you missed previous episodes. On July 28th, literally 1 month ago, I got an email from Honor Club saying that I'd earned 100 points on my account by playing the daily trivia and the pick'em, different things like that. And due to earning 100 points, they were giving me a coupon code for any free t-shirt from the ROH shop. Pretty cool. I wear t-shirts. I'll always take a free t-shirt. Even with the Honor Club discount you get, a t-shirt from the shop is generally still about $22 plus like $11 for shipping. So $33 off for a free shirt. I'm of course going to take advantage of that. But I try and the coupon code doesn't work. So what do? I email back to the person who emailed me saying, you got a free shirt, here's your coupon code. I just hit reply. I say the coupon code isn't working and I get no response. Here's the rest of the story. 3 days later, I email help at ROHwrestling.com and get no response. I wait another 2 days. I email the original person again. I email help again. And I also email feedback at ROHwrestling.com this time. And finally, the first person responds. And he says to me, what shirt are you trying to buy? I respond and tell him. and I wait. Another 6 days pass, at which point I send a follow-up email to this person. Have you had any luck figuring out what the issue is with the coupon code? He doesn't respond. That was 19 days ago.
Jeez.
So, since then, I tried tweeting at ROH and got no response. I tried complaining on this podcast, thinking maybe somebody would listen, somebody would hear it, and reach out in the mission of customer support. Nothing. No such luck. So today, 1 month after receiving that original coupon code, I decided to phone the number on their website underneath the help support section. I phoned this 401 phone number and got an answer immediately. Later, I'd find out that the person who answered the phone is listed as ROH's logistics coordinator. I explained to this man what happened with my shirts and everything, and he says he can't really do anything about coupon codes on his end, but why don't I try emailing help at ROHwrestling.com?
Oh.
I inform him that I have twice many weeks ago and didn't get any response. He asked for my email address. He looks through his files, through his email folder, and he confirms that I did email them. They did get both of my emails. He says he will email the person in charge again on my behalf and CC me. He assures me that things will be taken care of. At this point, I'm feeling good. He was very helpful, very optimistic, and I thought, okay, finally got a hold of somebody. I have somebody in touch. Half an hour later, I get the email that he sends out, and he CCs me on just like he promised. Good news. He says, quote, "This customer is having issues redeeming his points on the website. Can you assist him and confirm his account has a coupon?" Unfortunately, the email that he sends is addressed to the same man who asked me 2.5 weeks ago which shirt I wanted and then never got back to me. So now I'm skeptical. But 4 minutes later, this man, this mystery t-shirt man, responds to me on the logistic coordinator's behalf and asks me one simple question. What t-shirt am I trying to buy? Now, I refuse to flip out or mention to him that he asked me this very question 2.5 weeks ago and I responded at the time and he hasn't responded to me since. I simply respond to him again in my best patient tone of voice. I reply with a link to the shirt in the ROH Pro Shop and tell him I'm looking for a medium. That was 10:40 a.m. and it is currently 10:34 p.m. He has yet to respond. So that was I know you don't tune into this podcast for this, but maybe you're as entertained as I am because this is just friggin' hilarious now.
I can't believe it was the same exact. Well, I can totally believe it was the same exact guy, and I can totally believe that
he's just ghosting on me.
And why now?
Why?
Why? Why?
I don't know. I don't get it. It should be a simple matter of, yeah, the code works, or yeah, it doesn't. If it doesn't, here's another one. Try this one. I don't know. He's getting my emails, you know?
Yeah.
I got my first email because when I complained and he got back to me and asked what shirt I wanted, and then he didn't respond to that email or my follow-up. Now, 2.5 weeks later, he's asking me again. You know, he responded to the guy I got on the phone. He responded to that guy within 4 minutes. I responded to him within 25 minutes, and it's now been 12 hours, and he hasn't responded again. So, honest to God, if I don't hear back by Wednesday or Thursday, I don't know what to do. I guess I phone the number again and talk to the second guy who seemed helpful and just tell him that Chris Hall at ROHwrestling.com is no help at all.
Ooh, public call out.
I don't know what else to do at this point. Yes, it's just a free t-shirt. Yes, all I did was answer some stupid trivia questions. Do I deserve a free t-shirt? Probably not. But you offered me one, and I'm calling you on your offer.
Yeah, come through. I mean, just give me what you said you were going to give me. That's all you're asking for, and you're not asking for something insane. You're asking for a new coupon code so you can redeem it and get your darn shirt.
You know, I'm not even bringing up the fact that, hey, I paid $120 for Honor Club, and I wasn't able to watch the Honor Reunited shows live. Or, you know, that's like, this isn't strike one by any means. It's not like things have been flawless up till now, and this is the first hiccup I've run into. This is a month of trying to get a free t-shirt, in addition to other issues people have had with Honor Club and ROH support this year.
Yeah, it just comes back to what we keep talking about when we talk about this and, you know, with the Honor Reunited issue and everything. Like, just, you gotta have better customer service than this. This is a very basic customer service problem to solve. You can't solve it very simply. It seems like when someone is watching, there's a lot of effect. It's efficient. It's a actual like problem solving process. And when certain people aren't watching, the process is not as efficient or is completely, you know, doesn't happen at all. So it just seems like at some point there needs to be a little bit more of a, we need some quality control here with the customer service. Just a little bit.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but I mean, we've seen what's been happening to the Kingdom, and it's not dissimilar. This week on television, the Kingdom lost six-man titles because the referee counted a pinfall on the illegal man. I'm becoming more like Matt Taven with every passing day.
Yeah? Are you starting to like grow your hair out a little bit?
My hair is blonde, actually.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know, if you start doing this podcast in a Matt Taven-esque, you know, accent in his signature delivery, then I'll believe that the transformation is complete.
But yes, this week on television, our main event, Cody and the Young Bucks teaming together for the first time ever as a trio. They won the six-man titles.
Yeah.
They faced the Kingdom. NWA World's Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis was sitting in on commentary. And in the end, Vinny Marcellia got pinned following a crossroads, despite the fact that Matt Taven was the legal man at the time.
So, is there a conspiracy?
I don't know if there's a conspiracy, if there's just, we've been saying for a while that ROH needs a new enforcer. Ever since Bully got fired, there's nobody to follow up on these things. It's the Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk through that finish, because I watched it, and I've only watched it the one time through. So, like, what goes down that creates this? What causes this, like, confusion to happen that gets this pin called and the Bucks and Cody to win it?
Well, it's a Young Bucks match.
Okay.
So there's multiple moments with six people flying all over the place and flipping over the ropes in succession and brawling on the rings at the apron and on the floor. So whenever things break down like that, it's pretty hard to keep track of who's legal and who isn't.
Sure.
But Taven claimed after the match that he was the legal man and Marcellia wasn't when he was pinned. And Ian Riccaboni and Colt Cabana and Nick Aldis confirmed that this was the case. And I trust their journalistic integrity.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to me, is that they weren't really questioning that at all as a commentary team. They were all pretty much on that side. And typically, if we want to cast more doubt into the outcome, like into the rightfulness of the outcome, the commentary team might not be so quick to jump on that. But they were pretty affirmative that Taven was still the legal man, and so that pin didn't actually count.
The Kingdom will probably get a rematch at some point, I'm guessing. Not a Death Before Dishonor, because we already know Cody and the Bucks are going to be in a 10-man main event, Bullet Club versus Chaos. But maybe on television, or maybe at a live event in the future?
Yeah.
Well, okay, before we talk about what this means afterwards, what did you think of the match itself? Brandi Rhodes hit a crossbody from the top rope, so I'm guessing that means that she's healthy and ready to wrestle again.
That's right. And we also got a touch, just a little bit of a dose in her doing so, of some intergender wrestling.
Followed by some interspecies wrestling when Bernard took an enziguri off the apron.
Yes, exactly. We had multiple genders, multiple species, all in one ring. It was a pretty good six man with the Bucks. I mean, as you mentioned before, with the Bucks and the six man, you're gonna expect a lot of you get a lot of flying shenanigans, you get a lot of big spots, a lot of, you know, it works fairly well. It's not my favorite six man I've seen them in this year, but I thought it was okay. There was this kind of messiness too, I felt kind of led into was foreshadowing for the finish. So that might've been rather clever but there were several moments in this match that kind of fell apart for me as far as what's happening where, and there was so much going on, but it wasn't happening in a fluid fashion where I felt I was able to retain it in any meaningful way. That being said, I thought a lot of the tag-ins were kind of good, were well-timed, and, was impressed, as always, with the amount of punishment that Matt Jackson can take in any given match.
Yeah, we got Nick Jackson super kicking a balloon out of Marcellia's hands.
Fantastic.
To prevent him popping it.
Fantastic.
So finally somebody's catching on. I mean, he did pop one balloon successfully earlier, so we haven't had a consistent thwarting of the balloons yet. Nobody's come out with just pins up their arms or some sort of anti-balloon device. Earplugs, that's all it is. He just pops them in your ears. You come out wearing earplugs, but maybe that'll throw off your equilibrium if you're trying to do springboard moves and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if that would mess you up or not. It probably could, but it would be a great reveal if he did that and then I pulled out the earplug and I was like, ah ha ha.
There's a thing called a three stages of hell match. What about a five senses of hell match? So you pop the balloons. Then you bring out something really stinky, something that just smells terrible, and you try to shove it in the guy's nose.
Okay.
Then there's you have to force your opponent to eat some moldy cheese, shove it in his mouth in order to get that pinfall. Then, a thumbtacks for the pain, the touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the other one? Sight?
Yes.
You have to show him something really ugly.
I mean, never mind. I'm not gonna say mean things about people.
I'll take a shot at Vinnie Marcellia's dreads anytime.
I was gonna say, I feel like Vinnie Marcellia's dreads cover probably a couple of those senses.
Yeah, there's the smell and the touch and the sight.
Yeah, you could probably cover at least 3 out of 5 there. So.
All right, we're getting off track, as we do.
As we do.
The big question now is what this means for the 6 men involved going forward. For me, my assumption is this will probably be the end of the Kingdom wrestling as a trio for the near future. I'm thinking Marcelli and Orion maybe go into the 2-man tag division, and Matt Taven starts to do more main event stuff. My money is still on Taven versus Lethal for the world title at Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I think that that's fine by me. I think we've done what we could do for the time being with the Kingdom as a 6-man team. I'm ready to see another, they've been flirting with it. They've been utilizing it in various ways, but let's get a real singles push for Taven again. Let's see that title match against Lethal, because, we got a taste of it, especially in the match that ended up getting Lethal the title, so let's see Taven get his title shot like he's been demanding.
Yeah, I definitely don't foresee a breakup. I think they stay together as a trio. Just maybe Taven's not around when the other two guys are wrestling matches against Coast to Coast or against Best Friends. And they only make sporadic appearances when Taven's wrestling singles matches. Mostly we see them together for promos, backstage videos, things like that.
Yeah.
And then for the Bullet Club guys, what does this mean for Cody and the Bucks?
That's a really interesting question. How long are we expecting them to hang on to those 6-man titles?
Who is there for them to defend them against?
That's a great question, because SCU right now is focused on the Addiction taking on the Briscoes. So I don't really know. What is our other, Silas
and the Bouncers?
Yeah.
There's them. I was also wondering, Death Before Dishonor, the main event is a 10-man tag. Cody the Bucks, Paige, and Skrull against Chaos, which is Chucky T, Beretta, Rocky Romero, Okada, and Tomohiro Ishii. Ishii and Okada don't really make frequent appearances for ROH, but Chucky and Beretta are regular roster members, and Romero's been a full-time roster member in the past. So maybe there's a chance that that 10-man tag sets up Rocky and Best Friends going after the six-man titles?
Oh, that would be interesting and also make a lot of narrative sense for them being involved in this 10-man to begin with. So, yeah, I'm on board with that.
Give a purpose to the 10-man tag other than, hey, here's a great match featuring wrestlers you like.
Yeah. And, like, the Best Friends happen to be on the ROH roster, so this makes sense. And they're also in the Chaos faction. Because that inclusion, while completely reasonable, is still kind of a head-scratcher in, like, a 10-man. Like, to have a 10-man and include, like, almost as if you need a reason that is being set up. So I would like that. I would like that a lot. I think that would pay off that 10-man tag very nicely.
Other than that, I mean, yeah, Silas and the Bouncers, maybe Bully Ray puts together some sort of team, him, Shane Taylor, and someone, I don't know. The six-man division we've talked about in the past is kind of ripe for mismatched teams. People you don't really, who are kind of directionless, have them even within storyline. Just, you know, Josh Woods goes and finds someone in the locker room and says, hey, like, what? Want to form a team and try to win some gold because ROH isn't doing anything with us.
Yeah.
So let's make them do something with us, sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a lot of fun there. You can mix it up quite a bit in the six-man division, as we've just seen, because we're getting this, you know, getting the Bucks and Cody, getting the six-man titles. And we haven't seen this combo before. Now they have titles and they have to defend them. So who knows what comes next? Like who knows who's going to come after them? I think that opens up a lot of options as far as some like neat new pairings. But I do, I really like this Best Friends and Rocky Romero option. I hope that that's something that we see in the future.
Our opening contest on this week's episode featuring two former ROH world champions. It's the almighty Christopher Daniels and the chicken farmer from Sandy Fork, Delaware, Jay Briscoe. A one-on-one match between the Take Champ and the Take Challenger. We know at Death Before Dishonor, it's going to be Daniels and Kaz challenging Jay and Mark for the Take titles. And so we've been getting combinations of that over the past couple of weeks. And you're a fan.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could be accused, as you may have said, of being formulaic, and I don't think that you're wrong, but sometimes formulas work for a reason, and in the same way that a tag match sets up a good singles match, I think you can do the opposite with singles matches setting up good tag matches. And for me, the story is about solidifying Daniels and, you know, SCU overall as a face turn, because we're even seeing that with how Daniels is coming out. Instead of wearing the kind of pseudo generic fascist dictator garb that he was wearing this past spring when they were full heel, he's wearing the like fallen angel look. And that is definitely like trying to separate him from the heel persona that they were much, much more in line with this past spring. And so I think that the story here is like Jay Briscoe is still Jay Briscoe. Jay Briscoe is still heel. Jay Briscoe is heel in this story, of course. But Daniels needs another visual sell on him, needs another appearance where he can push that face turn more and more. And this is where we get it. And I'm for it. I'm like interested in what they're doing with SCU right now. I think a Daniels face turn, while my favorite mode of his is not necessarily a face mode. I think that they're doing this in the right way. And so the singles match, while on its own was just okay, did what it needed to do for me, so I was pretty pleased.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants, and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
So
Solomonster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
In my written report, I said this setup of the tag team that's going to challenge for the titles facing off in singles matches on TV is very WWE Raw. They do this with every tag team feud. And so maybe I'm being unfair in that sense, because yes, Raw does this all the time, over and over and over, but ROH doesn't.
No.
So ROH doing it once and doing it now for the first time in who knows how long, it's not fair for me to criticize them for that. And I mean, yeah, I mean, WWE logic would say next week we'll see Kazarian versus Mark Briscoe in a singles match. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but if it does, yeah, I can't fault ROH for WWE's overuse of devices. That's not fair.
Yeah, that's not entirely fair. I mean, you're always welcome to judge or critique things that don't work. But for me, and if this was like a bad match or like it didn't really work to push the story in any one direction, you know, they weren't really using it effectively to solidify Daniels's face turn, like, I would agree with you. But like I said, formulas are formulas for a reason. Sometimes just because it is a formula, it doesn't mean that it's a bad formula. Sometimes they go to that well too often. But in ROH's case, I think this was a good time to go to that well.
Our third match on this week's episode was Flip Gordon versus Silas Young. And thankfully, it ended in a clean finish. I thought for sure Bully was going to show up halfway through and just attack Flip. He had the wherewithal to wait until after the match ended this week. Thanks, Bully. The match itself, this really genuinely pains me to say, but I have to be honest and I have to be whatever with this show. I have to be fair in my criticism. I used to love Silas Young. I was such a huge fan of his. This time a year ago, one of my top three guys in Ring of Honor. And just, I don't know if it's partially their booking and partially the fact that it feels like he hasn't really grown or changed his character at all. He hasn't added to his moveset at all. I was watching this match and thinking, like, I'm just not into him anymore.
Yeah.
And part of it is, like I just said, himself. The fact that he hasn't really changed his character in any real way. They added Brian Malonis to his crew. That's about the only real change in the past few months. But also the booking, for sure. I mean, he lost the television title. He followed that up by losing clean to Chris Sabin on TV. And now he's lost clean to Flip Gordon on TV. So it feels like his stock is plummeting. When he first dropped the TV title, I thought maybe, like Dalton Castle, it would be a sign that he'd be heading towards the main event scene, moving up the card. Instead, he's become an enhancement.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that that's a really good point. I think about like just not evolving his style or his character, having it go any place other than where it is. Ian described his style as get off my lawn style during this match. And I very much feel that. And while that's fun for a little while, that's awfully limited. It's a very limited box in which to play in. And so like, for Silas, for me, is starting to like. I was kind of coming at it from disadvantage because I'm not in total agreement with you. I'm not a huge Silas Young fan, but I was impressed with some of the stuff that he had been doing around the TV title match stuff that he had been doing with Kenny King, and I was interested in that. But ever since his TV title reign and then losing it to Punishment, like it. Just feels like we're going nowhere fast with his work right now.
Until the post-match. This is the one thing that saved this whole segment for me. One look was able to save everything and make me intrigued again. And thank God, because I needed it. Like, if that hadn't happened, if it had just ended with Bully low-blowing Flip and walking away, my stock in Silas would have dropped considerably. I would have had him down in the Shane Taylor, Josh Woods area on the card. But so Flip gets the win off of a bridging pin, And Silas is kind of sitting there on his knees in shock after the match. I can't believe he just, like, he pinned me like that out of nowhere. Flip offers his hand for the code of honor. Now, before the match, Silas blew it off. He didn't even look like he had any interest in shaking his hand.
Yeah.
After the match, it looked like he was considering it. His hand, Silas started to move his hands slightly, like he might be considering the idea of shaking Flip Gordon's hand. You pinned me. You were the better man in this match. At which point, Bully Ray comes out, low blows Flip from behind, laughs at Flip, and then Bully glares at Silas and shakes his head disapprovingly.
I mean, he was picking up on Silas showing any form of respect towards Flip. That's what I got from that. And that, like, cold standoff between the two of them was just, like, well done, well timed.
Bully Ray was definitely judging Silas in that moment.
Yeah.
Was he judging him because he could tell Silas was gonna shake Flip's hand and Bully looks down on him for, like, doing that? Or was he judging him for simply for losing? For how are you losing to this guy? What, like, the last real man? What are you, you've gone soft now? You're losing to guys like Chris Sabin or Flip Gordon? And to me, it's important. The distinction is important, because if it's the former, it would seem to indicate that maybe Silas is going to turn face. Maybe that's where this is heading. He does have respect for these young guys in a way that Bully doesn't, and we're going to see a totally new Silas Young that we've never seen before. If it's the latter, maybe it's just a reminder to Silas that you've gone soft, you've lost your edge, and you need to swing back harder into the heel territory and really become the guy who won the TV title twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's also, there was a lack of complicity in Silas when it came to what Bully Ray did in ring to Flip. There wasn't any kind of, like, you know, there wasn't any kind of praise on Silas's behalf towards Bully for his actions, or, like, any kind of agreement thereof. Like, Silas wasn't, you know, wasn't in on this. Silas wasn't a part of this, and Silas wasn't really condoning it. He was just kind of there. And I think that's also part of what the icy stare down was about. I think that, like, Bully's judging him possibly for losing. Bully's judging him for, you know, or, you know, Bully's judging him for losing. Silas, maybe he's also judging him for, like, not, like, seizing this opportunity as a further opportunity to, like, beat down Flip while he's, like, already on the ground. I think there's a lot of layers to that that they can play with. And if it led to a kind of Silas face turn, I'd be interested in seeing where they go with that. I don't know how I feel about a face Silas. I really would have to see that developed in the right way.
Well, because, like you said, his whole character right now is essentially just the grizzled dad who just, like, doesn't want anything to do with anybody, thinks everybody's soft and millennials suck and stuff like that, right? Like, things were better in the 70s. Back in my day, things were great. Everything sucks now. So how is that a baby face? But I don't know. I mean, it's not a hard turn to make him the lovable curmudgeon. We've seen that device on a lot of sitcoms and a lot of successful movies.
True.
And the thing that fosters this idea for me, see, I'm on two fences of Silas. Does Silas go with the bouncers and enter the six-man division as heels and chase the six-man titles? Or does Silas turn face because it looks like Kenny King is turning heel? And a lot of times in wrestling, they like to keep the scoreboards even. So if one person turns heel, somebody else kind of turns face in order to keep matchups even still.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point. So as Kenny
and Silas are pretty close together on, like, the totem pole.
Yeah. And we saw in the promos this week that we definitely are still getting more continued storyline with Kenny flirting with this, like, dark side, and even with, like, maybe a continued feud with Marty. So, like, as a result of this, so he's got that, you know, heel angle pulled out. This is a smart time for them to kind of push Silas towards the light in one way or another.
What if we got Silas and Bully Ray against Flip and Colt Cabana in a tag match?
Wow, okay.
And Bully maybe gets him disqualified for using his chain again, as he's been known to do, and then Silas turns on Bully. for A, getting them disqualified, and for B, you know, attacking guys with a chain when they're out there trying to have a wrestling match.
Yeah, I don't know that that's it, but I can definitely see something along those lines.
We assume Bully's going to wrestle Death Before Dishonor, but against Flip or against Colt?
Or against Silas.
Bully's picking fights with everybody lately.
Yeah.
And it's not clear where any of this is going.
That's what I'm curious to see here. Like, does this become a rivalry between Bully and Silas, or does this become some kind of jumping off point for Silas to take another journey? Because you could read that interaction at the end a lot of different ways.
I love that we've had so much to say about one look.
Yes. As in comparison with like the rest of the match where we're just kind of like, eh.
I know, but I'm all about the storytelling. I'm all about in subtlety in wrestling. You don't get enough of it.
Yeah.
Everything's hit you over the head with, here's what's happening. Here's what you're supposed to feel.
Oh, no, absolutely. If they were going to pick a moment to take a subtle step back and like have a freeze down like this, I'm really glad it was at the end of a Flip Gordon Silas Young match, because, you know, that's not a subtlety you were expecting from a match. Like, you're expecting for like that to be wrapped into a package like that match.
Well, our last bit of new information on the show this week. That's not true. We also got another video package on Lethal and Gresham building their Iron Man match in 2 weeks. Not really a lot to say there, but these are well done. I like that they're really, really selling.
Yeah.
This big title match.
Yeah, I love it. I their two matches together have been some of my favorite that ROH has produced in this year. I'm all about it, and I'm glad that they're hyping it up. It's a lot of fun. It's giving Gresham the kind of highlight that he deserves. I'm starting to see from various like ends of Twitter that people are starting to feel like Gresham's a little too good for ROH. And while I don't know that I would agree with that, because I like ROH and I like seeing Gresham's work on ROH, I do think Gresham deserves attention and spotlight on ROH, and that he had not been receiving until recently. And so this build up with another match against Lethal is really, really what I'm thrilled to see. And I'm thrilled to see them like putting some time and attention and a spotlight on him.
And then we already talked about it a little bit. Kenny King and Marty Scurll. It appears that this might be continuing. We got a very brief promo from Marty applauding Kenny for cheating to beat him and bringing out the inner villain in Kenny. But Marty vowed that he will get the win back. And then we got a really long promo segment on Kenny, and I love this.
Yeah, they're going for this feud. They're going for this possible heel turn. They're committing.
But Kenny he carried himself really well in this sort of interview style segment, and explained himself really well. He said, you know, people love Ric Flair, 16-time world champion, the dirtiest player in the game. People love him. He's beloved, and he's a 16-time champion by cheating, by using dirty tactics. I've never been a world champion. So he's it's almost like we hear him as he's speaking. He's rationalizing this decision to himself, even more so than he is to us. I can do this. It'll earn me some world title matches, and the fans will still love me. The fans will still like me. They love Ric Flair. They love guys like that. They won't turn on me if I do, you know, a little bit underhanded stuff, a little bit whatever. And he closed with a line saying, I'm not the bad guy here. You know, this is, I just have options now.
Yeah, I really like that. I like the comparison to Flair. I like the idea that, like, they're acknowledging kind of the placement of the, you know, redefinition of guys' legacies after a while. I mean, Flair was a heel. Flair was a face. Flair was a face that fought like a heel. There's a lot of guys in the history of wrestling that like have reached an elevated status of being beloved by fans who did occupy that heel territory. And I think Kenny is like doing a good job of marketing himself as like the potential for him to be able to be a legend like that if he were to embrace like multiplicity and a duality of persona rather than just play straight up good guy.
I've drawn comparisons between Skrull and Eddie Guerrero before for the same thing, right? They use these tactics. They're good wrestlers. They don't need to use a chair or use a fistful of flour or an umbrella, but they do so anyway. And the fans love it when they do it because the fans love these guys so much. Now, where it gets interesting here is the one time Kenny cheats to win, the fans boo him. So that's, again, that's kind of like a multifaceted story, which I like, which is Kenny has convinced himself that he can cheat and he can be a little bit more villainous and it'll lead to world title matches and the fans will still love him. Just like with Marty, just like with Flair. But I think he's going to discover that the fans won't love him and the fans won't cheer him while he does this. And when he doesn't have the fan support anymore, then what does he do?
You can't really backpedal after that, can you? It makes you look weaker than you are. So you have to lean into the heel.
We saw this when Christopher Daniels won the world title last year, beloved by the fans. Then he happened to run into Cody and Bullet Club, and all of a sudden the fans turned on Daniels. And that feeling of like, you guys loved me 2 months ago, and now you're all booing me. Now you all want me to lose. We saw what it did to SCU. It drove Daniels and SoCal Uncensored so far off the deep end that now they're in risk of losing their jobs.
Yeah.
So if that happens to Kenny, I don't know how the Bachelor is going to handle it.
Well, currently, apparently, he's having quite the time on Bachelor in Paradise, so he's doing just okay in other areas of his life.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
For the first time in a while, I'm invested in Kenny King as well.
Yeah, they're doing some interesting stuff with this story. I'm glad that they're giving him something to do that's not just be the babyface here, because I like Kenny King okay as a babyface. I think he stands to gain a lot in for his in-ring performance, his in-ring abilities, if he can occupy a space that is not just pure face.
Well, and like Saz, it's a change.
Yeah.
It's something we haven't seen from Kenny in the past. And so for that reason alone, it's intriguing.
Both men need to incorporate new moves into their repertoire. They do. And they need to incorporate a bit new style into their repertoire. And if either of them are making some kind of, you know, face to heel or heel to face turn, that's going to give them the ground to do so, to reinvent their style in the way that is reasonable to their character, but also that is reasonable in way to their persona.
We are 1 month away from Death Before Dishonor. So whatever happens with these guys, that should be coming more clear in the next couple of weeks. Once again, Marty Scurll already confirmed to be a part of that Bullet Club 10-man match. So it won't be Scurll and King at Death Before Dishonor, which raises the question of where Kenny King falls in there. I don't see Austin Aries returning, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see who Kenny finds himself matched up against.
Yeah, it could be
someone like Jonathan Gresham.
It could be someone kind of arbitrary, just so that like Kenny can work out heel moves on somebody who doesn't have the kind of popularity that Marty does.
He would be in like an undercard match against Josh Woods or somebody like that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that might be the way that they go, so that he can like sell heel moves to a audience that still is probably more in favor of him than whoever his opponent might be.
Before we move on to our all-in predictions, I'd like to issue an apology to Josh Woods this week, because I feel like I've been dragging his name through the dirt a lot, and I actually like Woods. He's the first name that jumps to mind as somebody who is like never shows up or shows up like once every 2 months and often loses. And so I'm not picking on Woods. I mean, he won last year's top prospect tournament and now he never shows up on TV. So he just is the first example that comes to mind for me as somebody who isn't quite being used where you might have expected him to be used.
That's a very good, a kind of apology towards Josh Woods.
It's the best I got.
Aww. I'm sure that like nothing we've said has been unfair towards Josh Woods. And I'm
not criticizing him, the person or the performer. I'm criticizing his booking.
Yeah. I think I am guilty also of saying that his look is kind of generic.
Josh Woods. Yes. He kind of looks like a Ninja Turtles villain.
Sure. I mean, definitely in some way or another. But yeah, I mean, I have definitely said that. Again, that is not a bad thing. There are lots of wrestlers out there whose work I enjoy who also kind of fall into the generic look category. It's really not a, it's not so much an insult as it is just a general observation.
Yeah, I'll take a look that I'm not really that into over black trunks, black knee pads, and black boots.
Yeah.
That's about as generic as you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of guys on ROH who I would love to like tweak the gear a little bit. I've had a long conversation with someone else about Coast to Coast and how I think Coast to Coast is really great. But one of the things I can kind of hold them back is that I think their gear makes them look more like jobbers than they are. And I can't exactly explain why.
Their new like blue gear that they were showing off before Shaheem got injured?
Yes.
I loved it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something with that color of blue that I feel like reads jobber to me.
Oh, when they debuted it, I was like, oh, they got new gear and I love it. It's so colorful and it like it so stands out on this black roster. And
yeah, maybe that shows you them becoming like some pompous, like serious wrestling, like, yes, black trunks. But there's something about the icy blue that I just feel reads kind of jobber to me. And I'm not sure why. And I really feel bad about that. And I'm not saying that I only prefer like black or, you know, black detailed things, because I love the like pink and the bright pink and yellow Jay Lethal trunks. There's lots of examples I can't think of off the bat. But yeah, something about the Coast to Coast gear just doesn't work totally for me.
I tell you what, I think the pay-per-views are usually when people are at their best selves in terms of preservation and everything. So I'm making a mental note right here. In our Death Before Dishonor post-show coverage, we're going to do a list of our top five best dressed and our our bottom five worst dressed.
Okay, done.
That'll be a new segment on the show.
Yes, I mean, I would love the chance to talk a little bit more about the gear on display, because there's, you know, the pay-per-views offer us a little bit more in the way of talking about that than like your average episode does.
For sure. And oh, how do you think people are going to be dressed for All In? Are they going to be dressed like Woodstock? Just jean shorts and half covered in mud? Or are they going to be dressed like they're going to the Oscars?
I want to see just like nothing but like mud covered bodies.
The over budget, under mud battle royal.
Oh God.
It's just a big mud wrestling.
Yes, it's pro wrestling, mud wrestling.
Breaking news. The latest entrant in the over budget battle royal is Henry O. Godwin. They're turning into another hog pen match.
Wait, I'm not as familiar with this.
No? Do you remember the Godwins from the mid-90s, WWF?
No.
They're pig farmers.
Oh.
Yeah, they big husky dudes, wrestling overalls, and Henry famously had a hog pen match versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley, where they wrestled in a big pig pen, essentially.
Oh,
and there's mud, and they were slipping around, and they dumped manure on Triple H's head. It was the 90s, can I say?
Yeah.
Who didn't get manure dumped on their head in the 90s?
I actually feel like that was a really 90s thing. Like, either you got manure dumped on your head or you got slimed.
I feel like Ian Riccoboni would be in favor of bringing back the slime on ROH television.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he might be a slime guy. I feel like I get a double dare-esque-ness from him.
Yeah, the next time somebody crashes the commentary booth uninvited, they get slimed.
Oh, I love it. I think that they really should. They should go for this.
Our official predictions for the big show, like we said earlier, still maybe some matches to be announced or some mysterious involvements. We don't know. But as of 11:17 p.m. on what day is it? Monday, August 27th. These are the matches that we have. Opening the show, my guess, is the Briscoes versus SoCal Uncensored, being represented here by Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky. No indication of the ROH tag titles being on the line.
Nope.
So a little teaser for Death Before Dishonor. At Dishonor, it's going to be Kaz and Daniels. At All In, it's Kaz and Scorpio going up against the Briscoes in the opening show. One of the most ROH matches on the card.
Yes, very ROH.
And to that extent, what do you think, Emily? Do SoCal pick up a win in a non-title match in order to further their momentum heading into Death Before Dishonor? Or do the champions retain and point out that Scorpio is the weak link in SCU.
Oh, I think the Briscoes are going to win.
Yeah, I mean, Kaz and Scorpio aren't an established team per se. They're part of a trio, but the two of them together don't really have like a known track record in as a duo.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to bet against champions most of the time.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm starting to think about this prediction. I don't know. It depends on if they're like interested in giving the people what they want. Now, I don't want to speak for every All In fan or every person who's attending All In, but I'm going to take a wild guess that based on, you know, SCU's increased popularity, their increased presence at BTE in the recent months, I'm going to guess that SoCal Uncensored is going to have much, much, much more of the crowd backing than the Briscoes are going to have of the crowd backing. So yeah. It depends on if they're interested in giving the fans some satisfying...
Opening the show with a feel-good moment.
Yeah. And I'm curious about that because I really can't predict what they're going to be interested in, what kind of effect they're going to want to have right off the bat. This is also pre-show.
To be fair, they could open the show with a battle royal and have this match be second.
I mean, just personally, I do not advise that. I really don't like the idea of opening up with a battle royale and then segging into a tag match and then going into the main card. I think your battle royale should probably be your segue into your main card.
Yeah, and you open with a wrestling match. People will be hot for the match because it's the first match of the night.
Yeah.
And so if the fans are hot, do you want to have the homophobic chicken farmers go over?
I'm liking my prediction less and less, although I still think it could hold.
So who are you going with? I'm officially going with the Briscoes, despite your concerns.
Okay, well, just to mix it up, I'm going to go with SCU.
Okay, SCU winning the match in the worst town they've ever been in.
As per usual.
Second match on the kickoff, 0 hour show is the over budget Battle Royal. Entrants announced so far include Colt Cabana, Cage, Brandon Cutler, Jordan Grace, Billy Gunn, Jimmy Jacobs, Punishment Martinez, Moose, Ethan Page, Rocky Romero, and Marco Stunt, plus at least 4 or 5 or 6 more people still TBA. So to that extent, it's kind of hard to predict a winner because we don't even know who's going to be in this. What if Flip Gordon's in this? What if Chico El Luchador is in this?
Yeah, I mean, if Chico El Luchador is entered, then my vote is Chico. But otherwise, I'm going with my original pick. My pick whenever they first announced this, when they first announced the first 5 names, I think it'll be Colt Cabana.
Yeah, I want to say that too, as you know, as a nod to Colt's career and what a huge influence he's had on the Bucks and on indie wrestling and stuff like this existing, stuff like Being the Elite. Being the Elite exists because of Colt Cabana and Art of Wrestling and Colt's business model and approach to indie wrestling.
Yes.
And the Wrestling Road Diaries and all of that. So giving him this feel-good win in the suburbs of his hometown, on this big platform, getting to challenge for the ROH world title later in the show, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's hard to bet against.
Yeah. I want to be there for that. I want to see that happen. I want to see that pop happen for him in Chicago. So unless Chico gets added, I'm sticking with Colt.
What if Jordan Grace wins?
Then that...
And we get a woman challenging for the ROH world title. As far as I know, that's never happened.
No, it has not happened as far as I've been able to research. And of course, I don't think it has happened. And I am all about that, 100%. Also, I think it's kind of cool symmetry because if she were to do that, she'd be challenging Jay Lethal amidst this whole run in ROH with Jonathan Gresham.
Oh, isn't?
Yeah.
She's in a relationship with Gresham.
Yeah. And I think that's a neat symmetry of both of them having a potential, you know, they have matchups with Lethal, but I'm not going to count on that.
Okay, so theoretically, Jordan Grace could win the Battle Royal, challenge Jay Lethal for the ROH world title later in the night, that's this coming Saturday, defeat Lethal for the ROH world championship, and then have to defend against her boyfriend in 2 weeks time on television.
I mean, it's everything I want and more.
That I love that. It's not gonna happen.
Never.
But I love that.
Never.
Yeah.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
No, I mean, this is the most intergender stuff we're going to see in All In, unless they announce more women to be in the Battle Royale, and that would be so cool and so great. They should do that, please.
You'd hope so, because one woman and 16 guys is a little weird, too.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that, like, they have a bunch of women on the card, and they put them all in a four-way match, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, we've talked on past episodes about how that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But our opening match on the main card, already confirmed, is Hangman Adam Page versus Bad Boy Joey Janela, being accompanied by Bad Girl Penelope Ford. Now, it's not officially a street fight or falls count anywhere or anything like that, but I get the feeling the referee's probably going to be a little bit lenient in this one. Maybe not be too quick to count both guys out if they're brawling in the crowd.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that this one's going to get a little wild. And I have my prediction pretty much firmly on Paige, just, you know, based on the crowd and based on Paige and based on, you know, he's a Joey killer. So we may never see Joey Janela after this match.
Yeah, Janela is good. And I think he'll open a lot of eyes on this show for people who kind of only watch New Japan or only really follow ROH and don't get to see the indie guys too much. Like, I haven't seen too much of Joey myself,
yeah,
but what I've seen, I've enjoyed. And I think this will arguably be a breakout moment for both guys. These are two, like, young guys who could be top names a year from
now. Yeah. I've seen Joey Janela do some amazing work, do some really phenomenal work with Beyond. And he was at the IWC Super Indie Show in June. And he did some great matches there against David Starr and others. Like, he is more than, like, a big spot-taking, like, gimmick star. He's a really good wrestler. He's a really entertaining wrestler to watch. But I just can't deny Paige in this moment.
I'm going with Paige as well, with the rite of passage, simply because, yeah, it seems like I think it makes sense, not only because he's friends with the organizers, but he's been on a big roll lately with his performances in New Japan this year, his performance on the ROH Honor Reunited Tour, and having the first Bullet Club member of the night win the first match kind of sets up expectations of, gets us thinking Cody's going to win the NWA title, Young Bucks are going to win the main event. So whether or not that stuff comes true, it starts to set up our expectations a little bit. Next match on the card is the women's Fatal 4-Way or Four Corner Survival Match or 4-Way Dance, however you want to phrase it. There's four women, one match. It's Britt Baker, Tessa Blanchard, Chelsea Green, and Madison Rayne. This is a big one. We got a lot of pieces here. We got Britt Baker, the dentist. We've got Tessa Blanchard, son of the legend, a daughter of the legend. We've got Chelsea Green, who's a little unstable sometimes. And we've got Madison Rayne, who just challenged for the Impact Knockouts Championship a month ago, is challenging for the ROH Women of Honor title this weekend on television, and is competing in the Mae Young Classic in about 2 weeks' time.
Yep.
Madison is on quite the roll.
Yeah, she's having a heck of a comeback after coming back from injury, so really good for her.
So does she win?
No. I'm giving it to Tessa.
Any reason why? Tessa Blanchard in particular?
I think it, for me, her appearance at the press conference, the All-In press conference prior to the tickets going on sale, is very telling. Her family legacy, she shares a lot in common with Cody as far as, like, having a great deal of family legacy to build on and to reflect on, and using her career in non-WWE promotions as a way of kind of like highlighting her accomplishments versus, you know, those that were done within that Fed system. So I don't know. I just see the DNA there. I see the cut of strings, the similar, the parallel lines there. And I give it to Tessa, based on both her phenomenal abilities and also just there's some background there that I think kind of warrants attention. And I think that is kind of pushed me over the line for Tessa.
Yeah, this is one where I'm still on the fence. I still don't really have an answer. I agree with you. It probably won't be Madison. She's been having a big summer, but, you know, she challenged for the Knockouts title, but she lost. She's challenging for the Women of Honor title. 90% sure she's not going to win. Entering the Mae Young Classic, pretty sure she's not going to win that either. So I think she's going 0-4 on her summer of reign.
Yeah.
Now, Tessa, Britt, and Chelsea, I mean, yeah, they're all great. They're all on rolls. And I am not solid one way or another. So I'll, just to differ from you, I will go with Chelsea Green.
Yeah. Any particular reason Chelsea over Britt?
I haven't seen a lot of either women's work, but I feel like I hear a lot about Chelsea, a lot more than I hear about Britt. So for that reason alone.
Yeah, I will.
Word of mouth. That's my answer.
I'll hear you on that. I've watched a bit of Britt, and I actually just saw her wrestle live on Friday night in a show that was local. And she's a great wrestler. I would say if it's not going to Tessa Blanchard, I see it going to Chelsea Green as well. But just, you know, of the four women, I'm kind of completely set on the fact that it'll be Tessa that walks away the winner here.
Okay. Well, here's another one that kind of a big one. You've got the only Grand Slam champion in ROH history, multi-time champion in ROH, in TNA, a 25-year veteran, something like that, Christopher Daniels, the living legend, going up against Stephen Amell in his singles debut. Stephen Amell, famed actor, star of the hit show Arrow, he's only wrestled two matches ever. One was a tag match at SummerSlam, WWE SummerSlam many years ago. The other was a 10-man tag match on ROH television. And now it's Daniels and Amell one-on-one.
Yeah. So what'd you think? And I went first last time.
Oh, see, again, I'm so conflicted on this card. On the one hand, I want to say Amell gets the surprise victory. He, you know, Daniels is, if I'm interpreting ROH storylines correctly, Daniels is on the verge of retirement, and so Amell getting the big win would get headlines, arguably, maybe get some pop culture press, some traction, maybe even set up Amell for more wrestling appearances in the future if he so desires. On the other hand, Daniels is the legend, the ROH Grand Slam champion. He already got pinned by Eli Isom on a recent episode of ROH television. Are they going to have him get pinned clean by Stephen Amell too? What does that say about Daniels? And Daniels is challenging for the ROH tag titles 3 weeks after this. Can you have him get pinned by a non-wrestler, by an actor? I don't know. I really don't know, but I am going to go with Amell looks great in defeat.
Yep. I have basically the exact same notes. If you had asked me before last week's being the Elite, I might have said, I think Stephen Amell, maybe because of their personal connection and Christopher Daniels being the, you know, old pro, like, would be willing to eat that pin for whatever reasons. But I think that there's a reason that they gave him as much time as they did in that being the Elite, where, you know, Daniels did that like fantastic promo. And yeah, that kind of clinched it for me. I'm going to bet on Daniels here.
Unless we get a sort of twin magic situation where Hangman Page comes out and him and Stephen Amell switch places and Daniels doesn't notice because they look so much alike.
Well, you know, Page will be busy hiding Joey Janela's body somewhere, so I think we're okay.
What about Joey Ryan? Does he appear in some capacity at this show? Does that influence the Page Janela match?
Well, like, I know he's gonna be around because I think he's booked at StarCast.
So many question marks on this show, but we can't go back. We have to go forward. Our next match, it's the Rainmaker versus the Man with the Umbrella. Kazuchika Okada versus the villain Marty Scurll. Now, you would think on paper, this is a no-brainer. Okada wins. Okada's the heavyweight. He was IWGP champion for, what, 2 years straight?
Yes.
Or longer? Marty couldn't even win the ROH world title. He had multiple shots this year, failed. Simple, piece of cake, bing, bing, boom, Okada wins. However, Skrull is known to have a pretty deep bag of tricks. He's not opposed to using shenanigans. And I don't follow New Japan too closely, but I follow enough to know that Okada's been kind of having like a midlife crisis ever since losing the title.
You could say that.
He dyed his hair. He's been acting a little goofy, a little lost.
I mean, Okada's figuring things out, as one does when you have a massive change in your life, like losing a title that you've had for 2+ years.
So is that enough? Is that enough to allow Marty to use some shenanigans to pick up the win over the heavyweight?
As you said with Stephen and Mel, I think Marty's girl will look great in defeat.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to make a case for these matches could go either way, but I think Okada picks up the win in this situation.
I don't know that you bring Okada overseas to All In and give him a match, admittedly a match against Marty Skrull, who is going to be a crowd favorite. I don't think you give him that match without making him, like, giving him the win. I think that that's pretty clear. And it's another way to put Okada over with a crowd that may contain quite a few people who are still not as familiar with Okada's work as they probably should be.
Is that a shot at me?
No.
No, well, it could be. Because I admit, I'm not that familiar. I've seen some of Okada's Wrestle Kingdom matches and not much else.
Well, I think that still puts you ahead of a lot of people in that audience who may really just like strictly follow Bullet Club via ROH.
Or who only know Okada from his run in TNA.
Oh, cool. Yes, absolutely.
I pity those people.
Oh, that kid, a jobber from TNA?
Our next match, it's for the ROH World Championship. Our first title match on the card. For a big show like this, there's only really 2 title matches. That's a little bit surprising, actually.
Yeah.
But it is Jay Lethal defending against whomever wins the Battle Royal, which, as far as we're concerned, is Colt Cabana. So, Lethal versus Colt Cabana for the ROH World title. Here's a question, too. If it does become Colt, maybe this becomes a little bit of a comedy match. Not a full-fledged, like, all comedy, start to finish, but we've seen Lethal can work a little bit of humor now and then, especially if if somebody slaps him on the shoulder and he turns into Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah, we haven't seen any culmination of that in BTE.
No, they did it. He was appearing every week, and then he just kind of disappeared for a while. He hasn't been on episodes in, like, a month.
Okay, so this is yet another reason why I think it's important that Colt ends up in the seat, is because I think we need a payoff here. And I think the payoff is that we do get a comedy match, and that is someone with Colt Cabana and Jay Lethal. And I do think that that's going to – that weird persona swatching that happens with getting hit on the head or on the shoulder, that's going to come to play.
Yeah, like Colt goes for, say, a headlock, but as he hits – Lethal's shoulder, Lethal all of a sudden transforms into Macho Man and fires up with some of his offense.
Yep.
On the surface, you know, booking Jay Lethal in the ROH World title as a comedy match on a card like this, there are probably some people listening right now saying we're idiots. But I think variety is important on a card like this, and I think the fans would react in a positive way. I think it'd be a bit unexpected at first and a change of pace to the rest of the card. And if it's Colt in Chicago, I think the fans would get fully on board.
Yeah. First of all, those out there who are thinking we're idiots, of course we're idiots. This is all conjecture. We don't know. I mean, they could do anything they want to do.
We tried to book a 5 Senses of Hell match. Of course we're idiots.
Yeah, we're total dummies. What are you doing? Don't listen to this then. Go read a book, smarty. But if you, like, aren't calling us dummies, also remember that, like, the whole angle that they've been playing with Jay Lethal on BTE has been a comedy angle. And they've been selling this Macho Man persona. They've been, like, selling that. And he has done that in-ring. It makes total sense for that to come out at this show. Like, do not divorce All In from BTE. They've made very explicitly clear that, like, they are tying these entities together. These things are intrinsically tied. So what's good enough for BTE is going to be good enough for All In. So if you don't like it on BTE, well, tough, you're likely to see it at All In.
But who wins?
Lethal.
Yeah. I don't see a title change. Lethal just won the title, and it feels too soon for him to lose it.
Yeah. No, it'll be Lethal.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Our next title match on the card, arguably the most heavily built match out of all of them. And again, if you told us when they first announced All In that the most booked and the match with the biggest feud and the most TV time behind it would be for the NWA title, I would have been pretty surprised.
Yeah, me too. But I think that they had to do that because I think that there wasn't just going to innately be excitement for the NWA title. Of course, there was going to be people who recognized the importance to Cody, but like they did need to build this a little bit more than that. So they've done a good job planting that seed, growing that. They've had a fair number of interactions with Aldis now. They've been able to utilize that effectively.
And maybe the fact that NWA doesn't have a weekly television show or regular monthly events in the way that New Japan and ROH does frees them up to have a bigger role in this card and a bigger build to this match because they're not tied down by those restraints. And the NWA head is Billy Corgan, who seems really open to doing these kinds of things, working with different groups. And Billy Corgan, also from Chicago.
Yeah. Who's going to get this one? Nick Aldis.
Really?
Yeah.
You think Aldis walks away with how? Clean pin over Cody?
Yeah.
After all this.
Yeah.
Okay. I could not disagree with you more. This is like one of the few matches on the card where I am like 100% Cody is winning the same title his father held, becoming the first ever father-son duo to hold the NWA title, the title that was once the most prestigious title in all of professional wrestling. Cody, who has only lost one match in ROH in all of 2018. Cody, who's been the star of this whole show, who's booked this whole thing. He's going to have his bear in his corner. He's going to have his wife in his corner. And it's going to be a huge feel-good moment.
Yeah. I think that would be a really good feel-good moment. I think it would be really heartwarming. I think it would make history. I also think for whatever horrible sourness is inside me that they're not going to give us that. And instead, we're going to see Nick Aldis retain.
Here's a question for you.
Oh.
What's the deal with Flip Gordon?
Okay, what is it? Okay, I don't know.
Because he is not All In.
He is not All In. And unless this like Chico thing happens, which I'm still convinced it will. But I don't know.
Either the number one or the number two story for all of All In behind the Aldis Cody feud has been Flip Gordon trying to get All In.
I mean, that's been the number one story, honestly, if we're going to talk about like longest running things from this, because before there was ever a match with Aldis, they were already working this flip angle. They were working it within a week or two of when this show got announced.
And we have seen on Being the Elite and ROH television in many capacities, the Bucks like Flip. They want him to be All In. They wanted him to wrestle. They wanted him to be a referee. It's Cody who's standing in his way. Cody who keeps refusing. At first, because he kind of didn't like Flip. Later on, because Flip had the hots for his wife. Kind of understandable why Cody wouldn't like him then.
Yeah.
So Cody has been standing in Flip's way this entire time. Cody has also been trying to capture the NWA title for months. Cody has a bear in his corner. Flip has been established on ROH television as having been a mascot in his younger days.
Whoa. I forgot about that.
So now I'm talking myself out of my prediction. My official prediction is Cody with the Crossroads to capture the NWA title. But I'm have a strong leaning to Bernard the Business Bear costing Cody the match, beheading himself to reveal Flip Gordon, and Flip turning heel on Cody.
Oh, you think that that's... Wow, okay.
I think it could happen. And and at this point, I mean, you could see where Flip would be coming from.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, Cody's been just absolutely ruthless in preventing Flip from having any kind of access to All In. Yeah, okay. All right. So that still will, you know, bring the outcome that I am predicting as far as all this winning.
So that's my bonus prediction, I guess.
Okay, but you only get one of the official one is Cody.
It's Cody. I have it written down in my notes, and we will be sure to cross-reference these notes on the post-All-In show.
Yes. And for what it's worth, I actually do kind of hope that I'm a sentimental schmuck, so I do hope that your prediction is correct.
Our penultimate match on the card, it's your IWGP Heavyweight Champion, Kenneth Omega, facing off against Zero Miedo, Pentagon. Now, this is a big one. It's not for the title again, as far as we know. No title on the line. But Pentagon is currently a tag team champion in Impact Wrestling. He's still featured heavily in Lucha Underground. He's all over the place. He's really rising the stakes as being a big name, one of the big breakout stars of the past couple of years. And then you have Kenny Omega, possibly best wrestler on the planet right now, depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
So this is a hell of a match. And because the title isn't on the line, that actually makes it a bit more interesting, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, is there any chance Pentagon could pick up the surprise win and thus earn a future IWGP title shot?
That's an interesting question. I really can't tell. I do not know who's going to win this one. I have gone back and forth, and I do not know.
I'm going to play it safe and go with Omega because he is a world title holder. Pentagon is just a tag title holder, and historically, singles titles are always ranked higher than tag titles.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. I think I don't know. I could say just for fun's sake, I'll go with Pentagon just to mix it up. But I think it's going to be Omega. It's that hunch.
A lot of this show is going to be breakout performances because you have people from so many different spectrums here.
Yes.
People who only watch ROH will know a handful of the guys on the card. People who only watch New Japan will know another handful. If you follow Impact, you're well familiar with Chelsea Green and with Pentagon and Phoenix, but you might not know someone like Hangman Page. So it's so cool, the mix of styles and mix of promotions that we're getting here.
Yeah, and it stands to show a lot to audiences. So these matches, I expect a lot from these matches. I expect a lot of good to come for, you know, the opponents in these matches, regardless of whether they're like, you know, winners or losers. I'm excited for people to get to see more of like their abilities in ring, which is why like something like Kenny Omega versus Pentagon, I actually like the outcome we can talk about and we can bet on. But like, I think ultimately it's just going to be a showcase for both men and like what incredible things they're able to do.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who wins.
Yeah, it doesn't. And so many of these
unless Pentagon wins and earns a title shot as a result.
Yes, that would require some buy-in with New Japan and everything, but I don't think that that's totally out of the question.
It's not implausible. I mean, New Japan's been doing more shows over in America lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just saw someone like Jeff Cobb get a title shot for the Never Openweight Championship at the G1 Special. So, like, the guys come in and come out and come and go all the time.
Our main event, last match of the night, is a six-man tag. And, man, when was the last time a six-man tag headlined a pay-per-view?
I couldn't tell you.
All the more reason that All In is doing some interesting stuff and some different stuff, putting a tag match in the main event. It's the Golden Elite, Kota Ibushi, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson facing off against Rey Mysterio, Phoenix, and Bandido. And again, I mean, three of the top stars from New Japan, arguably the two biggest stars in ROH right now, facing off against WWE and WCW legend Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Phoenix, huge up-and-comer right now, like his brother Pentagon, tag champion in Impact Wrestling right now, big deal in Lucha Underground, and Bandido from PWG. I know nothing about Bandido, and he's in the main event of this show. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
This one, a lot of fun, a lot of flipping, a lot of flying. But who wins? This is another one where I am very much on the fence. Do you want to go first or should I?
I'll go first, and I will base it nothing more. I'll base it on nothing more than it's Rey Mysterio. But, you know, that actually hasn't held up that much in New Japan, where he's made appearances. He has lost in matches that he has been a part of. But I'm going to give it to the team of Mysterio, Phoenix, and Bandido.
I actually agree with you.
Okay. All right. So tell me your reasoning, because I'm still working out mine.
Like you said, part of it is it's Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
He's outside of Billy Gunn in the Battle Royal. He's the only real veteran on the card. I mean, after him, you have guys like Daniels, but for everything good we can say about Christopher Daniels, Rey Mysterio's career is at a different level. Partly due to the WWE exposure, partly due to the fact that he was wrestling, you know, on big stages and winning matches in the late 90s. And Mysterio was doing the kinds of things that the Bucks do now,
yes,
20 years ago. There would be no Phoenix. There would be Young Bucks without Mysterio, but they'd be much closer to Shawn Michaels' ring style, I think, than the moves that Nick Jackson does now. So to that extent, I think I could see Mysterio hitting a 619 on Matt or Nick, dropping the dime and picking up the pinfall for his team. I don't think the fans would boo the Young Bucks and Ibushi losing in the main event, especially to someone like Mysterio. I think everybody in this match is going to get cheered.
Yeah.
And I think to an extent the Bucks will want to not win in the main event of the show they're booking. They'll want to kind of show like, hey, it's not about us. We're not booking this just to put ourselves over.
Yeah. It's kind of why I wouldn't be surprised to see Cody lose. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bucks lose. I wouldn't even be surprised to see Kenny lose. I think if we're getting anyone over here, it is likely to be a Hangman. And then as for Marty, like, I think he's going to lose as well. So I think like that kind of goes in line with the idea of like, this is not a vanity project where they get to win big matches. They want to deliver. They want to give the audience a great show. They want to deliver an amazing match with top-notch talent. But the point isn't for them to just win everything and look like heroes.
Yeah, it's about the show. It's about everything. And from what we can tell, it's about paying homage to the history of wrestling, history of indie wrestling, and the future. Because last thing before we move on quickly, couple episodes ago, maybe a month ago on this podcast, I went on the record as saying that I was convinced that the Young Bucks are signing with WWE come January. And I take it back.
Oh.
I take it all back. I am 100% on board. I think, especially with All In selling out in half an hour, I think the Bucks are well aware of the momentum that they have, of where they are in the world right now. They know. They have to know. Everybody's telling them that them and Cody are changing the world of wrestling and indie wrestling in general. And I think they want to see how much change they can affect and how far they can take this. And I think All In is just the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think we've had this conversation since the Madison Square Garden sellout. But for me, the Madison Square Garden sellout kind of clinched to me that like they are both part, they are the Bucks, Cody, et cetera, they are a part of a company that is expanding, that is growing, that is giving them the like spotlight that they so desire. And New Japan is honestly doing the same thing too. If they sign with WWE, that goes away. The option to work with both of those companies goes away. At a pivotal moment for both of those companies, New Japan is making huge strides in their Western audiences, expanding quite a bit that way. And that shows in this partnership with ROH to take over the Madison Square Garden during WrestleMania weekend. This is exactly what the Bucks need to get the profile that they need without making a jump that is going to force them to sacrifice so much. So, yeah.
Yeah, and not only are ROH and New Japan giving them big profiles within their promotions, but they're giving them the freedom to do a show like Being the Elite and do whatever the hell they want on that show. To do something like All In and not only let them go and run their own little indie show, let's say we'll help you out. We'll lend you a ring. We'll lend you cameras, anything you need. We're here for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they 100% would not have that with WWE.
No, and they have control. This also kind of came to light whenever I was seeing one of the most recent episodes of Talk is Jericho is with Cody and the Bucks talking about All In, you know, revving up to All In. And it's really important to notice that they have sponsorships like coming at them from all angles. Really big, big sponsors are coming towards them. So, like, it's not for lack of financial opportunities to grow what they're doing with All In, to grow with what they're doing with their merch and all the opportunities they have there. But basically, they have everything they need aside from just like the big name that WWE is. And they're getting closer and closer to that without ever having to sign a contract that signs away all the stuff that they have right now.
I'm fully convinced they're going to stay, and we might get another All In 2 next year or something like that, assuming this is as critically acclaimed as it is anticipated, which seems likely.
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember that these are three guys who aren't, you know, they don't have booking experience. They don't have show running experience.
Matt Jackson does.
Oh, really?
High Risk Wrestling.
Oh, okay.
We talked about this on Elite Repeat.
Yes, okay.
He ran his own promotion for 4 years.
Yes, yes. Quite the professional production it was. But they haven't done this type of thing before where they are in charge of this type of show. So who knows? You know, I've seen some... I saw it on Friday night. I've seen a company do its first, you know, big pay-per-view and kind of flounder in a lot of the technical details and in match lineups and in various other things. So, you know, there's room, there will likely be room for improvement, but I think it will be incredibly memorable regardless.
Well, you'll be there in person to witness the entire thing. I will be watching on Honor Club, and afterwards we'll be discussing it. We'll have our next episode of Talking Honor will be a full all-in post-show discussing every match, the entire event, top to bottom. An episode like this, we always run long every week. We're up to like an hour and a half when we're aiming for an hour. This all-in show, I'm warning you listeners now, it's going to be like a 2 or 3 hour show knowing us.
Yeah, especially if we pull any guests in, like our post all-in spectacular.
It's going to be a big show, which is required at this point.
Yeah.
That will be in your ears sometime this weekend, either late Sunday, maybe sometime on Monday. It's not clear yet, but you'll find out when by following me on Twitter at Talking Honor or following Emily on Twitter at
Forked PGH, FORKEDPGH.
And then Monday or Tuesday for you listeners, we'll be back with our regularly scheduled weekly ROH podcast discussing Sumi Sakai versus Madison Rayne for the Women of Honor Championship. You can email us talkinghonor@gmail.com. Send us your questions, your thoughts, your concerns. How many points do you have on your Honor Club account? Have you had any issues with customer service? Have you received a free t-shirt when you were promised one? What do you think is going to happen with Silas Young, and what was Bully Ray's look about? Is there any chance that we get more intergender wrestling with Brandy and somebody else? Maybe somebody from the Kingdom? Brandy versus TK Orion? What happens when Kenny King turns heel and the fans don't like him anymore? And who wins at All In on all of the various matches? Send all of that to talkinghonor@gmail.com and we'll respond and we'll read it on the show. Instant famous celebrity at your disposal.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Now!